All right, good afternoon. It is Thursday afternoon, April 8th, 3 o'clock. We're in the afternoon lab section. And I'm gonna go ahead and do a share screen on my iPad. Let's see if this goes through the way it's supposed to. Looks like it did. All right, here's what I want you to do. What I want you to do is to give me possible formulas. See, how did I do this morning? I didn't give them the molecule. I gave them the mass of 106, molecular ion peak. Is 106. What I would like you to do is to calculate possible molecular formulas. From molecular ion at 106. So here what you're doing, start off with the rule of 13. Assume that it could have an oxygen in it, or maybe two, and see what you can come up with in terms of molecular formulas that fit that molar mass. Remember how to go through and do this?
So the first one should be C8H10.
Sounds right. Okay, so what you would do is you would take the 106, use the rule of 13, it's going to give us 8, that's 104, that gives us 2, so what we come up with is we come up with C8, H8 plus 2, which is going to equal C8H10. Okay, now what if I want to swap out and I want to put an oxygen in there?
Minus CH4 plus an oxygen.
Right, so we take away a CH4 and then we add the oxygen in place. So we come out with a C7. H6O. And what if we wanted to do that again? Can we do that? How many times can we do this? So we could go and we could say this is C6H2O, which doesn't look very likely in order to have only two hydrogens. This would be O2, right? Which looks weird. But what if we wanted to come up with some more hydrogens in there? One of the things that you can do is you can take away a carbon and you can add 12 hydrogens. You can swap a carbon for hydrogens. So we could come up with another formula that would be C5H14. O2, which looks more reasonable. So there's different ways in which we can swap out things. All we need to do is come out with an equivalent mass and swap an equivalent mass, and we can take and we can convert carbons into hydrogens if we need to. If we run out of hydrogens, we can always come up with more hydrogens just by taking and converting a carbon into hydrogens, which means then that we could do this one more time now, where we could take away a CH4 and we can add in an oxygen, and we could come out with a formula which would be C4H10O3. And all of these, if we check all of these, they should be all at 106. So CH10, C7H6O, C6H2O2, C5H14O2, and C4H10O3, these should all come out 8 times 12 plus 10 is 106. 7 times 12 plus 6 plus 16 is 106. 6 times 12 plus 2 plus 32, 106. So it's all working out. 60 plus 14 plus 32, 106. And finally, 48 plus 10 plus 3 times 16, 106. So all of these formulas are working out in terms of their molar mass. Okay, let's do another one. Let me give you one where I want 102. So the molecular ion peak is 102. And assume it has a chlorine and one or two oxygens. Let's see what we come up with. So you start it off the same way. Find the same base formula. Start off rule of 13. So 7, 13 goes into 102 7 times. 7 times 13 is 91. Do our subtraction, we've got 11. So our base formula, if we want to call it that, our base formula is going to be C7H18, right? 7 plus 11 is going to be 18. And then what we want to do is we want to perhaps add a chlorine in. So if we want to add a chlorine in, then I need a carbon and hydrogen equivalent in order to do the swap. So I need to know what a chlorine weighs 35. And so what I would do is I would just do the rule of 13 on chlorine. In other words, 35, 13 is gonna go into that too, that's 26. Subtract that out, that's gonna be 9. So that's gonna be a C2H2 plus 9 is 11. That's gonna be my equivalent. So I will have to subtract C2H11 to put in the chlorine to get the equivalent amount. So that means I'm gonna go to C5. 11 from 18 is 7, and then I can put in my Cl. And then if I wanted to put in an oxygen from there, now I'm minus CH4 and add in the oxygen. So that's going to be C4H3Cl would be 1. And I didn't put in the oxygen. And if I wanted to put in a second oxygen just to see, to come up with possible formulas, I would have to move, I don't have enough hydrogens. So I would first have to move a carbon over into the number of hydrogens. So that would be C3. 12 plus 3 is 15, OCl. And then I would take and go C2H11O2Cl, and that's not looking very sensical either. So all of these formulas would be possible formulas. So we've got C7H18, C5, H7Cl, C4H3OCl, C3H15OCl, and C2H11O2Cl. All possible formulas, all at 102. So you can see the way that we can generate various formulas using the rule 13 and swapping for equivalent masses and how we swap things out. Okay, so here's what I wanna do. Let's do another little exercise. Let me draw a couple of molecules. Let's draw some things that are saturated. Let's draw some things that are unsaturated. Let's throw some oxygens in there and maybe a halogen or a carboxylic acid. And let's get the formulas for these. So the first one is going to be C5H12, C5H10, also C5H10. That one was not maybe my best choice there. Let's change this one to make it into an ether. Still C5H10, but with an oxygen in it. This one is C4H3OCl. And this one is 1, 2, 3, 4, C4H3, 4, 5, 6. O2. Okay, calculate the masses of these. So 60 plus 12 equals 72. 60 plus 10, 70. 70 plus 16, 86. 48 plus 3 plus 16 plus 35. That didn't come out right. 48 plus 3 plus 16 plus 35. 102. And 48 plus 6 plus 32 equals 86. Okay, why am I throwing these molecules out here? Because what I wanted you to see was that regardless of formula, regardless of how we put an organic molecule together, they almost always come out with an even mass. Try drawing anything, any neutral molecule. Put any halogen in it you want and see what happens. Try fluoroacetic acid. Trifluoroacetic acid is C2HO2F3. So we've got 24 plus 1 plus 32 plus 3 times 19. 114. Every molecule you can conceive of, as you punch it out, comes out with an even mass. It's a conspiracy. There's something weird about the universe. But they all come out even. Try this one. Was it 3, 4, 5, 10, 11? N. What does that one come out to? Except nitrogen. Where'd you get that, BB?
Well, one, you mentioned it in lab, but then I drew a random one, and then it turned out to be odd.
Yeah, exactly. So 48 plus 11 plus 14. Nitrogen weighs 14. Nitrogen is even. But it comes out odd. So what's going on there with nitrogen is that when you look at every other element, when you exchange an element, let's say that we take and look at fluorine, which is 19, or chlorine, which is 35, or bromine, which is 81, or iodine, which is, I don't know, 70 something. What the heck is iodine? Thank you, maybe. All the halogens are odd. But what they do is when you take a molecule and you substitute a halogen into a molecule, you take away the hydrogen minus H, which is minus one. And then you add back the halogen X, which is plus odd. And so the difference comes out that you come out with an even mass because you're taking away one, an odd number, and you're adding back the odd number. So you're adding back even, essentially. So if we throw in a fluorine in here, the difference is that we took an even mass, we subtracted one, made it odd, and then we added back an odd mass, which made it even again. And that happens with all of the halogens because all of the halogens are odd. When you take and you put it in an oxygen, no matter how you put in the oxygen into the molecule, if we take a look at what happens to it, oxygen inserts in between the bonds. And so we get the oxygen and then we get the hydrogen. And oxygen is an even mass and it doesn't detract or add anything to the molecule. And so the molecule stays even massed. But when you put a nitrogen in, nitrogen is the exception. Nitrogen has three valencies. And so when nitrogen comes into a molecule, and we add in the nitrogen, it inserts in between the bond, much in the same way that the oxygen did. However, because of the lone pair here and the third valence, this is the plus one, which makes an odd mass. So an odd number of nitrogens equals an odd mass. It's true too that an odd phosphorus, because they're in the same family, will equal an odd mass, but this is rare. We don't see this. So when we see an odd mass, we automatically assume that the molecule has a nitrogen in it, as opposed to a phosphorus or some other element, because of the way that that makes the odd mass. Is it the same thing of IHD with nitrogen where it adds to the side of potential hydrogens? I might need the question rephrased. I'm not sure if I understand. Oh, the index of, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just typed that before you explained it. It was, yes.
Okay, so I've explained it. It has to do with the fact that nitrogen brings in that third valence. And because of that third valence and the additional hydrogen that the molecule has to bring in, it makes for the odd mass. So when we see an odd molecular ion, the odd molecular ion clues us in that we're dealing with a nitrogen and that our molecule should have one or three nitrogens in it. Three is rare. It's usually always one in terms of what we're looking for there for molecules. So odd masses help out in that way. Let's take and do let's go look at the website. Think, how do I get back to the main? Go to the top of the quiz. I don't know how I get back. There we go. Okay. This is the starting page in this website. And as I pointed out before, it has the introduction and shows you how mass spectrometry works. It has, in this case, a quadrupole that works on time of flight that they're demonstrating here. And then it goes through how to analyze the spectrum, which we've been talking about, and the fragmentations. And it has the different relative abundances of isotopes that we see that are here. But more than this page, it's really these examples, which I find more helpful than anything. And what's really nice about this website is that all of the practice is targeted towards functional groups. It's a functional group approach to mass spec. Most of the time, when you open up a textbook and you go to do problems within the textbook, the textbook jumps back and forth between all different functional groups, and they don't take a functional group approach. What this does is this leaves you with no understanding of how to deal with each individual functional group. Each functional group behaves uniquely within mass spec and has certain characteristics that when you focus on a functional group approach, allows you then to go back and identify what sort of molecule it is that you're dealing with within this. So what I like to do is I like to go through and look at what is it to expect with these different functional groups. And I was going to do this in lecture two and give a little bit more detail, but this is a good place to start. So when we look at alcohols, one of the things that it says here is that an alcohol's molecular ion is small or non-existent. Oftentimes it doesn't show up because they fragment so fast by alpha fragmentation that the molecular ion peak is sometimes non-existent. Cleavage of the C-C bond next to the oxygen usually occurs, which is the alpha cleavage, and a loss of water may occur as in the spectrum below. So looking for that loss of water, going from 59 to 41 and seeing a loss of H2O is a common thing that can help to indicate that the molecule is an alcohol. There's very little else to really indicate that, but alcohols like to do the alpha cleavage and also like to have a loss of water. Aldehydes, as carbonyls, they typically give that alpha cleavage as well as a carbonyl. They like to lose one. So you can see here that the hydrogen is chunked off. So it goes from 132, which is the molecular ion peak, to 131 through the loss of hydrogen. That's an alpha cleavage. And then from 131 to 103, they typically like to lose the CHO group, which is a loss of 29. And so finding that loss of 29 oftentimes indicates that this thing could be an aldehyde and seeing the 29 loss. Alkanes like to do what's called an alkyl loss series, a pattern where they lose 14 over and over again. So 71 minus 14 is 57, minus 14 is 43, minus 14 is 29, minus 14 is 15. And you can see it in the spectrum where it's going 71, 57, 43, 29, 15. That series oftentimes indicates that you either have an alkane or a long linear fragment of a molecule that is a bigger part of a molecule that is linear in nature. And so that alkane series shows up and is something to look for. Amides like to do McLafferty, and we covered McLafferty today in lecture. So here's an example of the McLafferty. They're doing it on the left-hand side as opposed to the right-hand side, as I like to show, but either side of the molecule will work for McLafferty. And they have it drawn out as 59. And notice the notation that I showed this notation in lecture. So now we're using that notation in terms of these fragmentation patterns. So amides very much like to go through and do McLafferty. Amines dominated by alpha cleavage. So this is an alpha cleavage for the amine. We didn't show any alpha cleavages with amines, but just like alcohols, they can undergo that alpha cleavage. And they have the odd molecular ion peak. So odd molecular ion peaks can oftentimes tell you that you're dealing with the amine. Now, notice that for every functional group, there's something different, which leaves your head spinning, kind of like, how am I going to remember all of these things? That's why I like this website, because the practice to this website takes you through a functional group approach where you master the one functional group before you move on to the next functional group. And you get to see all these little sort of interesting things. Okay, aromatic molecules. Notice that there's no fragmentations. They're not showing any fragmentations for this aromatic molecule, but what they are showing is that the molecular ion peak is also the base peak. That aromatic molecules are so stable based on their aromaticity that they don't like to fragment very much. And because of that, the main molecular ion tends to also be the base peak. And so when you see the molecular ion peak as the base peak, that oftentimes tells you you're dealing with an aromatic molecule. carboxylic acids, they like to do this piecewise chunk thing where they lose hydroxyls and then they lose carbon monoxide. And so you can kind of track this loss of 17 and then the loss of the CO group, which is what carbon is 12 and 16, so that's 28. So the loss of 28 and overall loss of 45 from 86 to 41 can oftentimes tell you that you're dealing with a carboxylic acid for the loss of the COOH group. Esters just tend to do alpha cleavages and McLaffertys. And so you've got alpha cleavages and McLaffertys that are going on within that, that are the main sort of things for esters. Ethers, alpha cleavages, and halides. Halides are really unique and often one of the places where I like to start, because halides are really pretty descript. They start off with their molecular ion peak being two peaks, two units apart. And that is true for bromides and true for chlorides. And the ratio of those two peaks, whether those two peaks are 1:1 or 3:1, tells you whether it's a bromide or a chloride. If it's 1:1 for those two molecular ion peaks, it's a bromide. If it's 3:1 for those two molecular ion peaks, it's a chloride. So halides can be really helpful. And then ketones are just the alpha cleavages. Let me look at those alpha cleavages for the ketones. All right, so I've just kind of like run through them. But what I'd like to do is show how do we use this. And this morning, I kind of chunked it. I picked one that I wasn't ready for. I have not done this afternoon. I did not do any further studying, but I'm going to give it a shot. And let's stay away from ketones for a minute, and let's go do the aldehyde quizzes. And we'll go to, I don't want to do, well, they use this a lot. They use an alkyl ion series, and then they use an alkyl loss ion series. And so we should define what those two things are. What's the difference between an alkyl ion series? Let's check the hint. An alkyl ion series is pattern formed by CH2N CH3, where N can be 0, 1, 2, or 3. Basically, this is the alkyl ions, as I was showing you before, where we have the loss of 14 each time. And so when they talk about an alkyl ion series, what they're talking about this is the pattern where we typically see peaks that are, let's start off with CH3, CH2, 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 and we'll put a plus on this. So this is C4H3579. So that's 48 plus 9. It's going to take me to my 57. This is 57. We're going to then go from the 57 to minus a CH2, which is minus 14. So we'll go from 57 on down to 57 minus 14, 43. You chunk off and you lose another 14. We get a 29. Chunk off, lose another 14, and we get a 15. This is what we call the alkyl ion series that tells us about a straight chain. And so the numbers, when we look at an alkyl ion series, we can back calculate starting with 15, go to 29, 43, 57, add another 14 to that, and we're at 71, another 14, and we're at 85. This is the series that we look for. The other thing that they talk about in here is, I think they called it an alkyl ion loss. Find the alkyl loss ion series. So this is the loss ion series. Alkyl ion loss is a pattern formed by molecular weight less the alkyl loss, where I'm actually losing the group. What this does is it keeps the oxygen. And so what they're looking at here is, this would be a loss series. If I have the molecule, and what I do is look at breaking each of these bonds, and the mass that is left over, including the oxygen. So what I would do here is I would take the first one, which is the CHO group. This one is going to be 29, 12 plus 16 plus 1. And then I'm going to add to it 14 each time. So I'm going to get 29 plus 14, 43 plus 14, 57 plus 14, 71 plus 14, this equals 85. And so the alkyl loss ion series is mirroring what's happening up here. It's just a different process. Rather than losing a CH2 each time, this one starts from all the way out at this point, out here where I lost the 15. And so we go from 71 to 85 to plus 14, 99. And then plus 14 would be 113. And that would be the loss series. And I would see it as a chunking off of the 13 first, of the 15 first to 113. And then looking for the 99, 85, 71, 57, 43, 29, that would be my loss series. Okay, let's go see how to use these. And then we'll work our way through these to the actual problem and what they're having us try to do. Now that we sort of understand what those things are. Let's start it here. Find the alkyl ion series in the spectrum. So this is what we were just talking about. It should be that it should be the 15, 29, 43. That's taking 15 and adding 14 to it each time. So 15, 29, 43. In fact, what I do This one is asking us to find the alkyl ion series. So here what I'm identifying is I'm identifying the 15. Maybe I should choose a different color. That's not going to show up very well. The 15, I'm going to go backwards and I'm looking here to work backwards, I'd have to go 15 plus 14, which is 29 plus 14 was the 43. And that's the series that I'm looking for in highlighting out those lines there. So when I go back to the website and back to the problem, it was the 15, 29, 43. And that's the correct alkyl ion series. Now they want me to find the alkyl loss ion series. This one is not, I was going to say, as easy, because they want you to do alkyl ion loss is a pattern formed by the molecular weight less the alkyl loss. So the molecular weight, we need to decide what the molecular ion peak for this is. So let's take a screen snapshot of this guy and go ask, what is our molecular ion peak for this? And then maybe we can calculate from that. So the question here is, find alkyl loss series. But to do that, first find molecular ion, the molecular ion in this series. So when it's an aldehyde, aldehydes will typically lose one. And then after losing one, they will oftentimes then lose the CO and lose the 29. So what we're looking at is for an aldehyde, we can sometimes see the loss of one and then the loss here in this way, such that what we're looking at is the CHO group equals 29. So let's take 72 and take 29 away. That's 43. So from 72 to here, that's minus 29. That is probably minus the aldehyde. If 72 is our molecular ion peak, as I'm presuming it to be, what does that make 73 peak that's there? How would I characterize that 73 peak? Why would it have one mass unit higher than the 72?
The carbon 13?
Yeah. So I've never really seen a good way to write this, but I usually write it as the molecular ion, which includes a C13. And then there's one here. I hate that when that does it. There's one here at 74. The 74, because we're dealing with oxygens, and this website likes to deal with oxygens as well, this is where it has an oxygen 18 as opposed to 16. And that's an oxygen isotope peak that is showing up at two mass units above. Okay, so the loss series then, if we're starting out at 72, that loss series should be 72 minus minus 14. Let's see if we come out with the right thing. 72 minus 14, come on, calculator, 58. And then 58 minus 14, it's 44. And 44 minus 14 is going to be 30. So as we go back and we look at what they're trying to have us find, I think we're going to see that it's going to be 30, 44, 58, which in finding the loss series, what I'm doing is just taking away 14 out of each one of these from the from starting from the molecular ion peak. So I start from here and subtract 14 from there each time. And that maps out my series here at 30, 44, which happens to be the base peak, and at 58, which is tiny, but is hanging out in there. Let's go back and see what the website says. Well, they're giving me not that. They're giving me 29, 43, 40, 57. And so 57, does that take away 13 and then 12 each time? Yes. So they start, and that's what I was wondering with in my head, but I didn't do it. So they took away, not 13, 15 to come out with 57. And then it should be the one off. So 57 minus 14 is going to be the 43. And 43 minus 14 is going to be the 29. So that's what I did wrong. So I need to start it by taking away a methyl group first and then CH2s each time. And then minus CH2, which is 14 each time from there. So we go back and we choose that sequence, 57, 43, 29, and that's our loss. 72 minus the 15 and doing it that way. Okay, now for this same spectrum, choose the compound that the spectrum represents. So how do I go through and do this? So with this skill set, first, let me get a better quality shot of the spectrum. Because the spectrum, when you zoom in on it, you can actually read the numbers, which is nice. They want us to find out, this is the same spectrum that we've done three times now. Put it here on this one. So we can really zoom in on it. And then they give me five compounds to choose from. So I'm going to write these down real quick. 2-propanol. Actually, you know what? It's just easier if I screenshot it. Get up there. Okay, so what I like to do with these choices when I'm given the choices like this is I don't work from the names, I start drawing. and I take and I draw representations of what each one of these molecules are. So propanol is 3 carbons and the aldehyde. And maybe I should have left this a little bit bigger so that I can draw next to them. 2-methyl propanol. This is going to have the aldehyde, 3 carbons, and then a methyl on carbon number 2. Pentanol, let's start off with the aldehyde, and then that would be 2, 3, 4, 5, that would be pentanol. 2-oxopropanol, that's an interesting one. So 2-oxopropanol, we have the propanol, and then the oxo is saying that there's another carbonyl on the second carbon. That's what the oxo nomenclature means. And then butanol, of course, is the 4-carbon chain. So there's 2, 3, 4. Now that you've got the structures and we work from the nomenclature to the structures, now we can get the formulas. So now this is going to be C3H6O. C4H8O, C5H10O. This has 2 units of unsaturation. So where it would have been C3H6, it is now C3H4O2. And the last one is C4H8O. So there's all our formulas. Once you have the formulas, now you can get the molar masses of each one of these so that we can compare it to the molecular ion peak. So now what we do is we go through and we say 36 plus 6, which is 42, plus 16, which is 58. We'll just go through and we'll check some of these. 36 plus 6 plus 16. That's our 58. 48 plus 8 plus 16, 72. 60 plus 10 is 70, plus another 16. 86. The next one has 2 oxygen, so I've got 36 plus 4 plus 32, 72. And 48 plus 8 plus 16 is 72. I can tell you already that just looking at this problem, the answer is going to be one of the 72s, because the way the website works is they give you a high and a low and then a couple of the same. And your job is to find the ones out of the ones that are the same structurally, how it fits within the molecule. So we also know that our molecular ion peak, which is here, is 72. So that being our molecular ion peak, that knocks out the 58 and it knocks out the 86. It can't be those two molecules. So now I have to find something else in here that helps me to figure out which one of these 72s it is. Now, this molecule had an alkyl ion series. The alkyl ion series tells me that this is most likely a straight chain molecule, the 15, the 29, the 43. That alkyl ion series only happens when you have straight chains. Not branching. So that's going to be indicative that this should be the butanol as opposed to any of the others. because it's the only one that should be able to have that series in it. There's other things that we could do to confirm. We can go through and we can calculate the alpha cleavages and look for the alpha cleavages and see that they're there. And we can compare those with the alpha cleavages of the others. But in this problem, I don't think we need to do that yet. I think we can just go, because they're giving us the alkyl ion series, that's what they're wanting us to look at. That's what I would say this one is. So we're going to go back and we're going to say this one is E. Correct. So this one, molecular weight is 72. 44 is formed by the last of 28 from the C2H4 from 72. And so that one's presenting with that. The next one, choose the compound that this spectrum represents. So let's try this next one and see what we can find in this next one. First off, let's get the spectrum. And then we'll get the compounds. See, I have no idea what it brought into the file. Yeah, it brought in three different things. So we'll delete this piece. Move that up. Okay. Let's take our spectrum and blow up our spectrum first. And then we'll go through our choices. All right, what's the molecular ion peak? Could the molecular ion peak be 85? Remember that what we're dealing with is we're dealing with aldehydes. Is it possible for the molecular ion peak to be 85? There's no nitrogen in this molecule. So because there's no nitrogen in this molecule, the molecular ion peak needs to be even. So 85 cannot be the molecular ion peak. That leaves us with 86. And then the question is, well, why is it so small and why isn't there anything to the right? It's small because it fragments so quickly that whatever this molecule is, it fragments right away. And so the molecular ion peak is tiny. And we're not able to see the C13 peak that is next to it because it's so tiny, it's just buried into the baseline. So the molecular ion for this is the even peak 86. So I'm looking at masses that are 86. Now, the rest of the spectrum, I don't really need to analyze right now, although since I was just analyzing alkyl loss series, 15, 29, 43, that series is in here, 57. And so this has some straight chain component to it that may allow me to eliminate some of the possibilities. 71. It's actually quite a long straight chain because that alkyl ion series is continuing throughout the entire series. So just by that, I could almost guess what this is. But let's take a look and get each one of these compounds real quick before we start taking a shot at what these things are. So hexanal, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 3-methylbutanol, 2, 3, 4, and it's a 3-methyl, so it's there branched. Pentanal, 5 carbons, 2, 3, 4, 5. 2-methylpropanol, 2, 3, 2-methyl would put me there, and 2,2-dimethylpropanol. At 2,2-dimethyl, it puts me there. So now I've got all the compounds. The other thing that I love about this website is it forces me to do nomenclature, which is super helpful too, because you start working all different sides of your brain as you're going through and you're trying to do this. So now it's a matter of finding the formulas. Hexanal, this is C6H12O. 3-methylbutanol, that is going to be a C5H10O. Pentanal, also a C5H10O. 2-methyl, this is going to be a C4H8O. And the last one is going to be a C, what am I, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, C5H10O. So I've got my formulas now. Get my masses, 6 times 12 plus 12 plus 16. This is 100. 60 plus 10 plus 16. This one is 86, 86, and 86. And then 48 plus 10 plus 16 is 74. Okay. Everybody following with what I'm doing here and how I'm moving through this? Obviously, my high mass of 100 isn't feasible. My low mass of 74, not feasible. I'm at an 86 molecular ion peak. So that takes me down to 3 options. Of those 3 options, I need to find an option that gives me an alkyl ion series of 71, 57, 43, 29, 15. The only one that has that straight chain, here's 15, 29, 43, 57. And then I don't know where I get the 71 from. I gotta figure that out. Let's see what's happening here. 86 minus 71. That's a loss of 15. So that is actually the start of, that's minus the CH3 group that I chunked out of there. Minus 14 plus 16 is the 29. What is it trying to do? 12. 12 plus 16 is 28 plus 1 is 29. And 86 minus 29 is the 57 peak. So from this guy to the 57 peak, this is minus 29. That is minus my CHO group. I'm still betting on the fact that it's the straight chain one, but let's bring another skill set into this besides the alkyl ion series when we're trying to figure out a straight chain. Let's take a look at the alpha cleavages and what we would expect for the alpha cleavage for the 3 most likely candidates. So let's take this compound which is a 3-methylbutanol. We'll take that radical cation and we will do the alpha cleavage on this side. and see what comes out of it. This is going to equal this guy with a hydrogen, and I will have chunked off that free radical. So the observable part of this is going to have CHO plus, which is going to have an MZ ratio equal to 29. And this piece over here would be my loss. All of these are going to give that same alpha cleavage that's going to give 29. And that's why we see a fairly big 29 that's in here. So that alpha cleavage isn't going to be as telling as perhaps the other type of alpha cleavage, the homolytic alpha cleavage. So what we could do is we could look at the homolytic alpha cleavage for each one of these. And that might be more telling. In this case, what's going to happen is we're going to take these electrons and dump both of them into that, which is going to give me this piece. And that guy, this is going to have a formula of C4H36789 and an MZ ratio equal to 48 plus 9, 57, which I do see in there. But I'm trying to think if any of these are going to give me anything different. How can I distinguish between them? That's going to break. That's going to give me a 57. That one I would be able to tell. This one would be harder. Okay, I know how to show you. Because they're all going to give the same for these guys. But the stability will not be the same. Okay. What can you tell me about this carbocation? Primary, secondary, tertiary?
Primary.
Primary. What about that guy?
Tertiary.
What about that guy?
Primary.
Okay. Which one of these is the most stable carbocation?
The second one.
The second one. If this were the molecule, that 57 would be a base peak. It's so stable that I would expect to see it base. And when I go and I look at the 57, 57 is not all that tall. The 57 is kind of small. It's not the base peak. 44 is the base peak. 44 is something else that's going on that we would need to figure out. But given the alkyl ion series, and given the fact that this guy, if this guy were it, I would expect that 57 to be very prominent. 57 is not. So I'm eliminating this one because the 57 is really not that big. And then between the other two, the branched and the straight chain, My money's on the straight chain because I'm seeing the 15, 29, 43. And that's what I would go for. So let's go back and see what happens. The straight chain is pentanel. Is that what we were? Yes, pentanel. Correct. From the alkyl ion series and figuring out that it's not branched. So each one of these problems, as you go through them, has similar types of problems that you need to break down and then to figure out how to eliminate different possibilities. Now, this one, notice that it gives almost the same options as the one that we had up here. And yet the spectrum is different. 72 is the molecular ion peak. 74 is the C13. Oh, no, I take that back. Yeah. 72 is the molecular ion. 73 is the C13. 74 is the oxygen 18 ion peak. 43 is the base peak. And so we would go through a similar process of writing each one of these down, figuring out which ones we can rule out by their mass. And then looking at the alpha cleavages and maybe a McLafferty cleavage to try to figure out which one of these compounds is the right compound. Right. And what we didn't find, just walking back this one for a second, because I just want to say, we never did figure out what 44 was. 44 was the most common of the fragmentation patterns, but we never figured out what 44 was. I'm just curious. Is it possible that 44 was the McLafferty? Just to see. So we go through and we do the McLafferty and we see what comes out. So that's my charge species. And what I lose is that. And so this has C2, H4, O plus, let's count that just to make sure again, I got two hydrogens here, 3, 4, and a positive charge. That should be right. This should be 48 plus 4 plus 16. What am I at, 10, 8, 5, 6, 68. It is not the 44, it's a 68. And is 68 in the spectrum? It's not. But like I said, sometimes they don't show up. So I'm not entirely sure what the 44 is. I would have to do some more work to try to figure it out, but.
I think it is the 44. I think the addition was wrong.
Maybe. What did I do? Oh, because I did 48 instead of 24. Because I was working too fast. 10, 4, there it is, 44. It is the McLafferty. That makes me feel better. Okay, so that is the McLafferty, the 44. So going through and looking at the alpha cleavages and looking at the McLafferty cleavages and looking for those alkyl ion series to tell you whether or not it's a straight chain, that's how we sort through these problems. And it is true of how we sort through the alcohols, how we sort through the aldehydes, the ketones, almost all of them. We do that same thing, except when we get away from the ketones, then we don't tend to look, or when we get away from the carbonyls, we don't tend to look for McLafferty so much when we get away from the ketones. So what I'm advocating, I think, here is in terms of this website, is to pick a functional group and to go through the questions for that functional group and work through them. And when you get stuck and you need something to sort of like help you out, go through the hints and look at the hints and see what the hint is getting at. Skip the ones that are dealing with the extra oxygens when it's asking how many oxygens, because that's just a much more obscure, rare thing. And it only happens on the aldehydes and ketones that they ask those in the first two. The rest of it in the alkyl ion series and the LAW series, and then figuring out the right compound, all of these are excellent problems. And they have pretty good hints in terms of what to look for on each one, which is kind of nice. And when you get the wrong answer, like let's say that I had chosen hexanal, it tells you why it's wrong. So more than just telling you that it's incorrect, it tells you why it's incorrect, which is really nice. So you're not left trying to struggle and figure out why I've got a wrong answer in there. Let's see, what else do I need to show you? I think for today, I think that's all I want to do today. And then set you up and let you turn you guys loose and have you guys go work on these. And they're better when you're working together through them with a partner. If you can get together on Zoom and you can work through them, it's a lot more fun to work through these than working through them by yourself. But this is where to go. And I will give you some problems like this. More often what I tend to give you in terms of a problem is sometimes I tell you what the answer to the problem is. I tell you the molecule and give you the spectrum and ask you to identify some of the shifts, not shifts, the losses. So I ask you to identify two alphas and the McLafferty and show where they are in the spectrum if they occur. And those are the types of things that I oftentimes ask students to do from these, because I know that this can take a lot of time to go through and work through these. But main thing is finding the molecular ion peak. Once you find the molecular ion peak, matching it up with the ones that they're giving you, and then working forward from that. Where we're going, just to tell you guys where we're going, we're going to doing problems like this in the cooperatives under FTR, mass spec, and NMR. I give you a problem where the problem has mass spec, the proton, a detail for the proton. You have the carbon NMR. You have the detail for the carbon NMR. And you have the FTIR. And that's it. I don't give you a formula. I don't give you a mass. I don't give you anything else. And your job is to go and work from the mass spec, find the molecular ion peak. From the molecular ion peak, figure out what your molecular formula is, your possible molecular formulas. Maybe look at the FTIR and see what functional groups may or may not be present. And then to start to dig into the proton NMR and the carbon NMR to figure out connectivity and to put the whole molecule together from spectrum like that. So the mass spec becomes a critical tool, but we're not using mass spec just independently to try to identify a molecule most of the time. It's in cooperation with other things. So that's kind of where we're headed. So we've got, I think, one more day on mass spec on Tuesday. And then on Thursday of next week, I'll start introducing how do we put it all together and doing some examples of how we put it all together. And we'll talk some more about IR as well. Although I do more of a review on IR because I know that that last semester you guys did IR with Zaruba to some degree. And so that's more of a refresher than it is from foundation for the IR stuff. Okay. How are we doing? Seems overwhelming still. Not so bad, just I have to work. I have to go work at it now. Yeah, that's kind of the way that it is. Any questions come up while we're working through it? For the stuff that we did, at least? I'm sure that there are other questions as we move forward.
This might sound dumb, But will you just reiterate so that it's more cemented in my brain of what defines the molecular ion peak?
Yes. The molecular ion peak is oftentimes hard to identify. The main thing that we say that the molecular ion peak is the highest mass to charge ratio peak, less one most of the time. So when we're looking at a spectrum and we're looking at increasing mass to charge ratio, and we have a peak that is out here and then another little peak next to it. And
are you writing?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I am. Sorry. No, you're right. I just start going and for some reason it dumped out of the screen share. I must have moved the windows around. Sometimes when I move the windows around, it dumps out of the screen share. Okay, so the molecular ion peak is the highest mass to charge ratio less one, most of the time. So if I take a look at the mass to charge ratio, and I say that this one is 86, and this one is 87, this one here would be considered to be the molecular ion peak. And this one, the molecular ion peak with the C13 in it. And I say most of the time, because sometimes the molecular ion peak is missing. Alcohols, for example. And so sometimes for some functional groups, we have to do some extra work. Usually if the molecular ion peak is missing, I will tell you, or I won't give you something like that. I usually give you things where the molecular ion peak is. Sometimes I'll give you things that look like this, and you have a peak, small peak, another peak, another small peak. This might be 102, 104. This one in here is 103, 105, and you get something like this. This is usually an isotope effect where they're two units apart. And so this one would be considered to be the molecular ion. This is the molecular ion plus two from the isotope. So something like RBR79 and RBR81, these would be two units apart. This one would be considered to be the molecular ion and the molecular ion plus two for the 81. And then these little guys in here, these little guys are the C13 isotopes for each one of the respective peaks that they're next to. So sometimes it takes some sorting out and some fishing out, but generally what you're doing is you're just looking as far down as you can, finding the highest, and looking for an even mass most of the time, because the odd masses, it's just unlikely to have a nitrogen. But if there is an odd mass, then that odd mass generally looks like this. Generally you have a taller peak and then a small one, and this might be 87 and this might be 88. The question is, is it nitrogen or is it an alcohol, right? So this would be the molecular ion peak for the alcohol, and it lost the proton and went to 87. Or was it, this is the molecular ion, which is 87, and 88 is the C13 peak. So which of these two is it? Oftentimes we need some other data to help us try to sort that out. It's not easily sorted out just by looking at the mass spec by itself. And that's, to be honest with you, why I love the website that was Linda Breach's website. Because when you're in the alcohols and you're doing the alcohol test, you know everything you're dealing with is an alcohol, which helps you to resolve which is the molecular ion peak that I'm looking at. When you're in the amine section and you're doing the amines, they're all odd mass and you know what you're looking for in terms of the molecular ion. If there's just hodgepodge, then it's like, I don't know what to do. And so you don't want to get paralyzed by that. So that's why I like this website so much. It's the functional group approach, which is really helpful. Okay. Did that get it, Bibi? Awesome. Okay, any other questions come up? Ready to call it a weekend? Maybe. I am. I'm ready to go rest my back. All right, let's give it a call and I will see you guys next week. Remember, I'm always around on email if you're getting stuck. And you can always get to me through the Discord app as well. So if you zing me on the Discord app, you can find me. And I usually respond pretty quickly. Unless it's 11 o'clock at night, in which case I might respond or I might not. You might not hear from me until the next morning. Okay?
If right. Pokey or Miley don't have anything, I was wondering if I could show you an alternative solution really fast to the one I got wrong on the exam.
Yeah, let me go ahead and stop the recording.